My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco-Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
All right, welcome back. You are listening to another episode of The Mark Moss Show, where we talk about Bitcoin. We talk about the decentralized revolution that the world is going through, and we look at it through the lens and the convergence of politics, finance, and technology to try to understand what the heck is going on in this crazy, crazy world. I try to bring to you some education so you can understand really what's going on behind the scenes, because of course you were never taught it and you're being misled all the time. Try to bring to you the latest breaking news, and of course I try to bring some interesting guests on so you can hear from some other people but me talking all the time. And I am joined in the studio right now with one of my good friends, Mike Alfred. Mike, thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. It was good to meet you in Miami recently.
Yeah, we just got to meet each other recently. We've been kind of following each other on Twitter for a while. And we got to hang out there in Miami. Go to some of the parties together. that was a fun way to get going. I enjoyed that. I think we met at the Unchained Capital party and then the Gemini party or whatever. But you know what's cool about that is social media. You know, I have a daughter who's just graduated high school, and all her friends' parents are like so eager to send their kids off to college, and I'm just not a big believer in that. And there's certainly things you need a college degree for, but unless you need that, I'm just not a big believer in it. And I would ask them, like, you know, okay, what do you see as a big benefit? And most of them would always go back to not the education, the experiences. They lean on that, but then they lean on the connections. They're going to get the connections. And I'm like, dude, have you heard of Twitter? Because like, I've like met everybody in the world on Twitter. Like Mike and I, we were like friends on Twitter before we were like friends in real life, you know? It's pretty amazing. I'm sure you use it the same way.
I thought it was overvalued for most of the time I use it. It wasn't until last summer when I left NYDIG that for the first time I tried to actually engage with the platform every day. And now I see how valuable it is, because I've met maybe hundreds of people through Twitter just over the last 12 months. It's opened up a whole bunch of doors. It's allowed me to invest in a couple of new Bitcoin companies. I joined a couple of boards, all from Twitter. And that surprised me, because I used to think it was kind of a foo-foo thing that people did. It was sort of a waste of time for CEOs to be engaging with social media, but I've seen the light now, Mark. And you came right up to me at a party, and you knew who I was, I knew who you were, and it's all because of Twitter. So
yeah. Do you think it's changed? So like, obviously like you have network effects, right? So the bigger the network gets, the more valuable it gets. And so, maybe it was kind of more foofy as you, in your words, or not as usable, but now today, since everybody's on there using it more, it's become more valuable.
I think it depends on your interest graph. So before Bitcoin, you know, Twitter was less interesting. I think the Bitcoin community is one of the most rabid communities on the internet. And Twitter is sort of like one of the primary places where people involved in Bitcoin come together and share information and build relationships. And so I think for me, a lot of it was just becoming kind of a full-time Bitcoiner in a sense, like really embracing that as part of my identity as something I wanted to talk about and think about every single day. And when that switch flipped, Twitter all of a sudden made more sense, right? And the community here has been incredible. I mean, look, I sometimes get in battles with people. I mean, that just seems to be part of the space. It's funny how many friends I have that are like enemies of each other. But that's just sort of the fun part of using Twitter.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important to battle, you know, not in a bad way, but in a good way, because good ideas are won through discussion, right? And so we need to kind of, I call it like verbally sparring, right? We need to spar back and forth and in a good way. And we learn from that. A lot of times I'll see somebody's post and I'm like, oh, wow, that's so good. That's right. I hadn't thought of that. And then I'll just read the comments of people sparring back and forth, debating, if you will, right? And I'm like, ooh, I didn't think about that. I didn't think about that. So, you know, it's important to be able to have that discussion, and it's worked good for that.
Agreed.
I didn't start using Twitter until 2018. I was in Hawaii. It was January 2018, and I was on the North Shore of Oahu. We were there for a month, and I woke up in the morning, and my phone was like making this like weird alarm, and I think it was 7 in the morning, something like pretty early. And I grab my phone and I look at it, and it says imminent threat. Inbound missile alert. This is not a test. I'm like, what? And then like, I look at my wife and like, she's got the same alert on her phone. And we're like, and this was right at the height of like the whole North Korea thing with Trump, and like, North Korea is going to fire this missile. And here we are. And it's like, alert, inbound missile, imminent threat, not a test. And then that was it. And then there was like no news about it. You could turn on the TV, jump on the internet. There was nothing. And people were freaking out. All the neighbors were jumping in their cars and taking off, although where are you going to go hide on an island, right? And my business partner at the time, he was on Twitter. I wasn't. And so he jumped on Twitter, and then all the information was on Twitter, right? And like, I couldn't find any information. And so that was like, okay, I started on Twitter, and it's great how the information goes. But let's jump past that. That's some fun stuff. But some of the things that's been going on in the Bitcoin and cryptocurrency space the last couple of weeks, it's been fun to see happening on Twitter. Well, fun, depending on what side of the ball you're on. But we're starting to see a crazy liquidity crisis happening, and almost like this domino effect, maybe starting with Terra Luna and now going through into other platforms. Celsius, Voyager, I don't know, maybe Genesis, BlockFi, Nexo, and we don't know how far this gets. Let's talk about that for a little bit. I know you've been like pretty vocal and outspoken on that. Like, what's your take on that, on the big picture, and then we can kind of dive into that?
At a very high level, I think we're at the tail end of like a 10 to 12 year kind of Fed-fueled bull market where interest rates have been held at a very low level for too long. There's been too much money creation. There's been too much risk taking. Everybody's way out on the risk spectrum. And so even before you get to crypto, I mean, you just look at what happened to Tiger Global this year. You look at the decline in some of these large cap technology stocks, including some like Facebook and Netflix that were viewed as kind of Teflon up until about the last kind of call it 9 to 12 months. And so I just think we're seeing what happens at the end of every liquidity cycle, where there's this cascade of folks that get liquidated because they convince themselves that the world was going to continue on in the same trajectory that it had been on for the last 10 or 15 years. And that's the problem with an unstable monetary policy. I mean, I do fault the Fed and politicians. I mean, they didn't see inflation coming, and then they don't understand that all of the activities that they've engaged in, including zero interest rate policy, quantitative easing, stimulus, et cetera, you can give out checks, $600 or $1,200 to people, and then you can lie to them and say that won't cause inflation. But the reality is they've basically hollowed out the middle class and the poor in this country through this policy. And so that filters over into crypto. You know, people can't get a yield. because interest rates are zero. They can't put their money in a savings account. And so they become deluded into thinking that it's okay to deposit money into a platform like Celsius, which is essentially an unregulated shadow bank offering unsustainable yields in an environment where yields are basically zero. And so the first red flag for something like Celsius is just that if you see yields of 17% when your bank is offering 20 bips, like you might want to ask yourself, how much risk am I taking? And then when you see a CEO that engages in essentially weekly conversations with the community where he repeatedly lies about the risks that were taken, fails to disclose irresponsible risks that led to loss of client capital, and then consistently makes sort of irresponsible decisions across the business, you know, you shouldn't be surprised. My current view on this, Mark, is that Celsius is probably one of the worst actors in this entire ecosystem. It was completely predictable, in my opinion, that it eventually was going to have problems. I also knew that BlockFi had made poor decisions as well. The difference seems to be that the investor community completely lost respect and trust in Alex Mashinsky and the Celsius team. Somehow, some way, the sort of inexperienced team at BlockFi managed to hold on to some credibility in the market, and therefore they're able to kind of get bailouts at this point.
Yeah, that's a good breakdown. I want to break that down a little bit more and dig into some of this, including like the short squeeze that's like maybe they're trying to form up and the credit extension that's been thrown to BlockFi, what that consolidation means. I got a quote from Lennon that I want to read to you as well that I think helps sum up kind of where we're at. Maybe talk about, you know, who's swimming naked in kind of like a Warren Buffett type of quote. So anyway, you're listening to the Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the decentralized revolution the world's going through. We're talking about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, of course. I'm in the studio with Mike Alfred. You can find him on Twitter at Mike Alfred. And we got a lot more to cover when we get back, so don't go away.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from the Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
All right, welcome back. You are listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the decentralized revolution. We're talking about Bitcoin. We're talking about what's happening in the cryptocurrency space. And I'm in the studio with Mike Alfred. You can find him on Twitter at Mike Alfred. And you were explaining, Mike, how you know, this is basically kind of the end effects of this long-term bull market, the longest bull market we've been in history, and what happens. And it made me think of this Lenin quote that I wanted to pull up real quick. Vladimir Lenin from Russia, not someone that we should model after, but he said, quote, the best way to destroy the capitalist system was to debauch the currency by a continuing process of inflation. Governments confiscate secretly and unobserved an important wealth of their citizens. By this method, not only confiscate, but they confiscate arbitrarily. So through inflation and deflation. And then at the end, he says, as the inflation proceeds and the real value of the currency fluctuates wildly from month to month, the ultimate foundation of capitalism becomes so utterly disordered as to be almost meaningless, and the process of wealth getting degenerates into a gamble and a lottery. And so I think that's kind of where we're at, where it's like, you know, at the end of this long-term debt cycle, through all this inflation that's happened, there's no yield left anymore, right? The interest rates are down at zero. They've pushed everybody out onto this crazy risk curve to try to get any kind of yield they can. But ultimately, they've turned it into a generation gamble. And so now everybody has to gamble. And I think, to your point, they think everything just goes up in perpetuity, and it doesn't. And they find out, unfortunately, they find out the hard way.
Yeah, and if you were raised in the 1950s or 60s, right, you were told, hey, save money, buy government bonds, put it in the bank, right, earn more than you spend. And that whole model was flipped on its head because the Fed changed the rules. The rule for the last 12 years was beg, borrow, and steal as much capital as you can get, take as much risk as possible, use as much leverage as possible. It doesn't matter, because if you mess up, we will bail you out. So that Fed put incentivized increasingly risky behavior, and only some people understood the rules of the game, right? So when people were overlevered going into the COVID situation in the spring of 2020, guess what the government did? They basically bailed those people out with PPP loans. So these companies got $5 million, $10 million, $20 million PPP loans that were forgiven. And yeah, some of the employees got to keep their $15 an hour job for an extra 6 months, but the owners of those firms should have been wiped out. Right. By that irresponsible leverage that was on those firms. So I think when the Fed manipulates the market like this, nobody knows which prices to trust. Nobody knows which rules of the game to follow. And so people got sucked into things like Celsius, where, yeah, if you can't get a reasonable return in your bank, you might be convinced that even though it makes no sense, something like Celsius might work.
Yeah. What about the Wall Street Raiders, whatever we want to call them, right? I mean, they've been at this game for a long time. George Soros became infamously rich, making $1 billion a day by breaking the peg of the Bank of England. And so it seems like Wall Street traders or raiders, they're going to always want to go after these. You know, they smell a little blood in the water. They want to attack. And so I don't want to dig into this, but it looks like there's a big Wall Street fund, Blue Street or Blue Sky, is going after the BOJ right now, which is pretty interesting. But they want to be a George Soros. But back to the crypto space, it's almost like they spot these things like Terra Luna or Celsius, see how they're over-leveraged, understand they're over-leveraged, and they can start to see where their liquidation levels are, and they just start hunting those liquidation levels. I think that's what happened with Terra Luna. It looks like that was what's happening with Celsius, and they keep trying to lower their liquidation levels. But of course, everybody knows where they're at, so it's like the Raiders want to keep pushing that down. Do you see something like that happening? Do you think that's what happened?
Yeah, I mean, look, that's the essence of capitalism, right? Markets systematically hunt down and kill any sort of weakness. So if you have weakness in any form, the full extent of any capital cycle, right, if it's allowed to happen, which again, the Fed has sort of put a pause on normal cycles in some senses, right? We're supposed to suspend disbelief and believe that bull markets can go on forever with no interruption. But in a typical cycle, all of the weakest players at some point get taken out. When times are good, right, you can get away with all kinds of shenanigans. But as soon as the tide goes out, you find out who's swimming naked. And I think that's what happened with Terra Luna, right? Like, it was a weak system. It was sort of designed to fail from the beginning, and so it only took one powerful actor who identified the risk in that system and put a little bit of pressure. You just lean a little bit on the weakest part of that system, and the whole thing collapses. Mm-hmm. And you know, Japan's in a tough spot. I mean, the yen actually used to be a safety trade. If you remember back in the last financial crisis, the last major one, people bought the yen, and it actually went up, you know, over a 5 or 10 year period. recently now they've got to print a lot of yen just to protect their bond market. And their bond market may go down before our bond market. And obviously we have huge advantages in terms of being the global reserve currency that they don't have. But we'll see what happens there. I actually hope that that doesn't happen because I think it'll end up being bad for everybody.
Yeah. Well, I think it's inevitable. I mean, it's only a matter of time. It's I think more when, not if, but back to kind of the crypto space a little bit. So obviously Terra Luna got taken down. You know, you said it's capitalism doing its thing, which it is. And I agree with that. I'm not super happy about it because, like, you know, some rich Wall Street guy made an extra couple bucks and he ruined the life of a lot of people. But that's capitalism. It's not their fault. Don't hate the player, hate the game, right? It's the game that enables them to play that. It's this fiat money system that, and it's the Fed behind them that's enabled them to get to this point. And so I think we have to put the blame where the blame is due. You know, back to Celsius, you know, they froze withdrawals, which was kind of the death knell, right? They were getting a run on the bank, which is always going to happen when you're over leveraged. It's kind of like the free banking era that we had in the late 1800s in the United States, right? Each of these banks were over levered. There wasn't enough money there. They had to shut down withdrawals. Did you see this week they started getting that little short squeeze? They were trying to organize a rally on the Sel token.
Yeah, I mean, there's a guy named The Real Plan C who is an influencer on Twitter with 100,000 plus followers who told everybody it was safe to use Celsius up until the last moment. There were other influencers like this Invest Answers guy who literally had Mashinsky on days before the withdrawal shutdown, basically giving him a platform to continue to spew all kinds of potentially, definitely misrepresentations, but potentially fraudulent misrepresentations about the state of the platform. Mm-hmm. To customers. And so that's bad stuff. These same people who did that are now trying to organize a short squeeze on an essentially worthless token, which is fine. That's a free market too. But like the token has nothing to do with whether or not people are going to get their money back. So I'm really more focused on the underlying solvency and liquidity issues experienced by the corporate entity Celsius Network and whether or not the sort of 500,000 or so depositors into that institution ever see any of their money back. My current view is unless there is a bailout, unless there's some sort of acquisition of all of the assets and liabilities of Celsius, that it almost certainly will go into Chapter 11 over the next, call it month or two, and then it will take at least a year to start distributing assets to the underlying customers. That's what I'm focused on. I think the short squeeze is a total sideshow.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, that sounds like the most probable outcome, right? They've already brought on the people to kind of help that wind down. I think there's a difference of money they had in custody versus money that was being earning yield. So then they'll probably get divided up between that a little bit better. There's a chance. There's a chance you might get some of your money back. I wouldn't hold your breath, but there's a chance. It might be pennies on the dollar. We'll see how that shakes out. I want to talk more about this BlockFi and this credit from FTX. I think that's kind of interesting. I want to talk about that in a minute. I'm in the studio with Mike Alfred. You can find him at Mike Alfred on Twitter. You're listening to The Mark Moss Show talking about Bitcoin and the decentralized revolution. I'll be back with that and more in a minute, so don't go away. I'll be right back.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
All right, welcome back. You are listening to The Mark Moss Show, talking about Bitcoin. We're talking about cryptocurrencies. We're talking about the decentralized revolution, and I am in the studio with Mike Alfred. You can find him on Twitter, at Mike Alfred. And we've been talking about, the capitalistic system, how the Fed kept things too low too long, and we ended up here, and some of the damage that's being done in the cryptocurrency space. We were talking about Celsius. Maybe someone gets some of their pennies back. We'll see what happens with that. But with BlockFi, maybe they're in the same boat. Of course, the problem with all these companies is we don't know. When I was at the Bitcoin conference in Miami a couple months ago, I met with one of the head guys over at Celsius, and I told him as much. I said, look, I said, I can't give you money because I have no way to quantify the risk. I said, if you could give more transparency over the assets and where they're at, et cetera. I said, then I could quantify the risk and I could decide if I wanted to. And I said, I think if you would give more visibility or transparency, that would help your business. Apparently they didn't do that. But BlockFi, kind of the same thing. We don't know, right? It's like this black box. Maybe they handled credit or risk better. We don't know. But it looks like they just got a credit line from FTX. I'm sure you saw that.
Yeah. Yeah. That was what, $250 million?
Yeah, which is probably a drop in the bucket, I would imagine, right? Considering what funds they have.
Yeah, well, Sam Bankman-Fried is personally worth over $20 billion, right? And he personally did a $500 million investment into a company that I was involved with last year. And so, like, the guy seems to have almost unlimited liquidity at this point. And to his credit, I mean, FTX only has like 200 or 300 employees. So they're far smaller than most of the other venues and exchanges that have done the same amount of volume. He's an exceptional entrepreneur. Nobody's perfect. I'm not lionizing him. I'm not saying that like everything he's doing is right, like necessarily good for space in the long term, but you got to give him credit for helping both Voyager and BlockFi at this point, because both of those firms might have already gone out of business without some support from him.
Did he also extend a credit line to Voyager as well?
Previously. Yes. I don't know the exact numbers there, but I've seen a lot of figures flying around. But all that said, I mean, Voyager lost so much money with 3AC that the stock was down like 60% at some point this morning. It was under 50 cents. So, I mean, the market's basically saying Voyager could go to zero at any point.
Yeah, the stock. If the stock goes to zero, does that mean the company goes out of business?
Stocks rarely go to zero in the absence of bankruptcy.
Right.
But remember, even in a bankruptcy scenario, the stock can still trade above zero for a period of time, because sometimes during a reorganization, people still manage to get something out of the company, depending on what the balance sheet looks like. But I'd much rather be a senior secured lender to those companies than an equity shareholder. You know, BlockFi was one of the first companies in this space to really show cracks. So I think at the sort of beginning of 2021, there was no substantive difference, in my view, and qualitatively, between the risk books of Celsius and BlockFi. And BlockFi got caught in that Grayscale Bitcoin Trust trade, which looked like a no-brainer, right? You buy the trust at NAV. As long as you hold it for 6 months, you can dump it back on the market at that premium. And for most of the history of GBTC up until that point, it traded at a 20%+ premium. So it looked like free money. And so kids with no risk management experience and no Wall Street experience probably would think that's fine. And they piled into that trade. They locked up a huge chunk of the deposits in BlockFi in that trade. And then when that premium discount flipped negative during the drawdown in the spring of last year, all of a sudden they were completely upside down. Mm-hmm. So if they had experienced a similar bank run to what Celsius just experienced over the last month or so, they would have gone busto last spring. But again, they had such good equity backing that they were able to continue to raise equity and plug the hole in their balance sheet. Celsius did a similar thing. They raised a round of equity last summer. They didn't announce it until the fall, and they used that to paper over their balance sheet. So I think the only difference today, Mark, honestly, is that BlockFi grew up faster. somebody on the board or somebody in that investor base said, listen, Zach and team, you guys need to grow up. You guys need to have put your big boy pants on and actually develop some adult level risk framework so you don't lose all of the depositors' money and go bankrupt. And they listen and they stop doing the same types of crap that Celsius was doing all the way up until now. I mean, you can see on chain, Celsius continues to gamble with depositor money, even as they've frozen the customers' assets.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the narrative that I've always kind of believed, and I guess maybe I was naive, although I wasn't using these services, but I always believed that they were doing over collateralized loans. And so it was supposed to be risk-free because they had over-collateralized loans. But then it turns out like Celsius is losing money in this like Badger DAO attack. Like what the heck are they doing in something called Badger DAO in the first place, right? And so they were like way out on the risk curve, it sounds like.
And that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, they lost $75 million in stake count because the protocol team managing that protocol lost the keys. They put a whole bunch of money into a mining business at the peak of the market when they have no expertise in mining. They would run around the market telling everybody, they're one of the biggest North American miners. I mean, those of us in the space just kind of chuckled and said, what the hell are these guys doing? Then they put out an S-1 about a month ago to take a mining business public. It is a wasteland in the publicly traded Bitcoin mining space. I mean, there are stocks that are down 90, 95%. Some of them are going to go to zero. I know of at least one publicly traded mining company that's already about to default on some of their loans. And so this is not an environment to take a mining business public, but it speaks to the desperation of the Celsius management team because they had made so many poor decisions compounded on top of each other that they literally had to file an S-1 for an illiquid mining business at the worst time in human history to do that. So it's just an absolute disaster. I really think the people who lost money in this, they need to accept that they're probably going to lose a big chunk, probably up to 50 to 80% of the money at the low end, right? If they're lucky, they'll get 80 cents on the dollar back. But instead of attacking the people who pointed out the risk here, maybe spend more time looking at all the management decisions that led to this so that you can avoid it in the next for future times, right? Because I think if you learn from this, great, maybe you won't make the same mistake again. If you spend all your time attacking folks that were just trying to call out the misdeeds, again, I think people are wasting their time on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's it again, it's a capitalistic system, right? So in any market, right, you have short sellers and then they might decide to put big short positions. And then, of course, they're going to start talking about how bad that position is or that company is to try to drive it lower. And it's just part of the capitalistic system. And so you have to identify the risk. All this leverage builds up. And if you're going to put your money there, and you don't know that the Celsius is going into Badger Dow or whatever this other one you're is talking about, if then if you're not paying attention to that, then why do you have money there, right? And so you kind of have to figure that out. And to your point, I think they have to kind of take this lesson and learn. What is that saying? I never lose. I either win or I learn. And so hopefully they'll learn from that. I was thinking about BlockFi just in regards to this. And to your point, Sam Bankman-Fried, he's got a lot of money. I mean, FTX, you know, between FTX and Alameda, they seem to be pretty much in bed with Tether as well. Big pockets. I would imagine if he's putting $250 million in, he's probably not going to want to lose that $250 million. So he might have done a little bit of due diligence and he might be prepared to do whatever it takes to keep them afloat. You think they might have dodged a bullet with was that kind of like a vote of confidence from SBF?
Yeah, I think so. And you know, if you've got SBF on your side, there's a good chance that you won't go out of business, right? And the other thing to keep in mind is they were already out raising a down round in equity.
Yeah, they were
raising at $1 billion valuation. I don't think they were finding a lot of success with that. But after an equity investor sees a vote of confidence on the debt side from an SBF, they're going to be more likely to put equity in because they can underwrite it with a lower risk of losing all of the capital that goes in. I want to make one quick distinction, though, Mark, on if we could just go back real quick. I think there's a big difference between Terra Luna and Celsius. Terra Luna, you actually had some sort of organization or trader attacking Terra Luna directly. In the Celsius case, it was literally just mismanagement. There was no particular single incident. There was no particular single actor that precipitated that situation. Whereas Terra Luna, it was very clearly one actor that was moving against that token, ecosystem.
That's a really good point to bring up. So I appreciate that. You're listening to the Mark Moss Show. I'm in the studio with Mike Alfred. We are talking about Bitcoin. We're talking about the cryptocurrency space. We're talking about the state of the markets with the Federal Reserve driving them to a level never seen in the last, the longest bull run in history. And here we are, delevering the system. I want to talk a little bit more about who's swimming naked when we come back in a minute. So don't go away.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Parrot Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
All right, welcome back. You are listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about Bitcoin and the decentralized revolution, specifically in the studio with Mike Alfred, and we are talking about the blow-up in the, I don't know what we call it, CeFi, centralized finance world, if we'll call it that, talking about Celsius, talking about BlockFi, talking about Voyager. You know, a couple of people that I haven't heard a whole lot about, maybe you have, is Genesis, that seems to probably be behind all of these people, and then Nexo as well. What have you heard about them?
So, I mean, Genesis is a digital currency group company. It's Barry Silbert, and that is probably one of the best financed, funded organizations in the entire space. Barry systematically buys back stock every single year and also pays a dividend, which is very unusually for a non-public growth company, and they have some of the strongest equity shareholders in the world. And so Genesis is probably the last lender that would ever fail in the space. And from what I hear, they terminated 3AC and some of the other bad counterparties alongside BlockFi and others, right, pretty early. And even if they took losses, they have a big enough balance sheet across DCG that, like, probably not going to go anywhere. The rumors about Nexo are much worse, right? There's a lot of conversation about whether or not Nexo is actually solvent. I don't have any smoking gun or particular issue to take with Nexo like I did with Celsius, where with Celsius I felt like it was definitely going to collapse. And I said that multiple times on the record. I'm not going to say that about Nexo because I don't have enough information. But if I was a depositor there, I'd be thinking about pulling my assets out.
Yeah,
based on just the chatter that I'm hearing in the market.
Yeah, I was always skeptical of Nexo just because, one, they're a European company. I forget exactly what country they're from. And their founder has some, you know, rumors about where he's from and maybe some nefarious things that he's done in the past. And that lack of transparency, lack of U.S. regulation concerned me. But I saw today they came out with this post talking about how they're partnered up with Citi to do some, I don't know if they're going to try to provide liquidity to the space. They put out a press release talking about how they'd buy Celsius. I think it was just like a press release. It wasn't like an actual, you know, LOI or anything like that. so it looks like they're trying to make some noise, kind of trying to prove that maybe they're above all that. But yeah, I would probably be pretty skeptical of that as well.
Yeah, my impression is that Citi is quite desperate to be in the space all of a sudden. I'm not sure where that's coming from at the executive level within Citi, but somebody gave a directive that they need more exposure. And so they seem to be thrashing around trying to get into the custody space, trying to back certain companies. Their analysts keep making comments about how high Bitcoin can go, even though they knew nothing about Bitcoin like 3 weeks ago. So I wouldn't read too much into anything related to any of the banks, because frankly, none of the banks have proven, the big US banks at least, have proven to have any real expertise in the space. They'll come when the hedge funds are clamoring for services, but the moment the price goes down, they seem to disappear. So I wouldn't read into that. I would focus more on whether Nexo itself is actually solvent and what kind of lending they've done behind the scenes. And if there's real risk there, again, my vote would be to remove your capital from all of these centralized lending platforms if you haven't already.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement. And what about the big news that broke this week with the first short ETF that Gensler just approved on Bitcoin? What's your thoughts on that? Is that bullish or is that bearish or is it neutral?
I mean, it could be bullish, right? Just because usually by the time a short ETF comes out, right, most of the move is sort of over. Michael Sonnenschein, the CEO of Grayscale, actually put out a tweet storm arguing that it was actually bullish. But I think the SEC regulation angle is actually the more interesting one, and just that the SEC is allowing these futures-based, what I call garbage products with 10-15% fully loaded cost when you look at the cost of rolling those contracts every month. It's just kind of ridiculous that they would allow those products to exist, but they wouldn't allow the biggest Bitcoin fund, the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, to just convert to an ETF and remove the discount from NAV that the fund is currently trading at. I mean, that would help so many more people than giving the general public another vehicle to speculate with and to trade with.
Degenerate gamblers.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. It's absolutely, I'm starting to think the SEC is trying to hurt the public through some of these actions, because it actually makes no logical sense why you would allow a futures-based short product before you'd allow a spot ETF.
Well, I think you could look at most of the SEC's actions and probably draw that conclusion. Just look at the accredited investor rule, for example, right? So they can't get into the early round deals, but they can get dumped on by retail as soon as it goes public. I mean, I think you could probably draw that conclusion with most of them. And I think if you look at Gary Gensler, head of the SEC, I mean, he obviously knows Bitcoin. He was teaching at MIT. He gets it. He's quoted Satoshi. He seems like he gets it. So then you kind of have to look at that and then look at his actions and then think like with these synthetic, you know, degenerate gambling, you know, naked shorting, for example, that they're bringing out, or even this, these long synthetics or whatever, it's like almost like it hurts the cryptocurrency space more and even potentially hurts Bitcoin. So like, are they doing it maybe as the way for the government to kind of attack Bitcoin and crypto potentially? Or maybe he doesn't want to have a physical so he can encourage people to buy the physical. I don't know. It's interesting. It could go either way, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think it's probably more ineptitude than conscious effort to destroy Bitcoin. Like, I honestly don't think the government's smart enough to do that.
What about for somebody like myself and probably yourself as well, not trying to put words in your mouth, but, you know, a Michael Saylor type, right? I'm long Bitcoin. I'm going to hold Bitcoin. I want my grandkids to own my Bitcoin. I'm never going to sell. So I'm not trying to trade it. I'm not trying to sell at the peaks and rebuy back at the dips, et cetera. You think having a shorting ETF could be beneficial in that type of environment where I don't want to sell my Bitcoin at the top, but I could take a little leverage on the short to protect myself on the downside?
I think net of all the expenses and the potential taxes on that, you'll find most people over a 10-year period come out behind. Any trading at all generally is going to be a drag on long-term returns, especially for an asset like Bitcoin that has the potential to compound at 20, 30, 40, 50, 60% a year across a decade. So my advice is never going to change on that, no matter how many newfangled products that Wall Street comes out with to try to tempt people to trade more or tempt people to hedge more or whatever. The vast majority of people will not use those products properly, no matter how hard they try. And they'll end up poorer and worse off by even using them at all.
Yeah, so for the listeners, what Mike's referring to is that I believe on this short fund, they recalculate on a monthly basis, and then they put the fees at about 2% per month. So over the course of the year, it costs you between 10 to 15% in fees. And so you're going to have to beat that just to break even on that. And then on top of that, if you have profits, you have to pay taxes on that as well. So when you net out the fees and the taxes, like, it's pretty hard to get ahead, I guess. Is that kind of what you're referring to?
Yeah, I'm saying the stated expense ratios are always lower, right? They're not going to tell you 10 or 15%, but the cost of rolling, because the futures contracts and the contango, right, that happens sometimes in these contracts as the prices change across those months as you look out, and just the trading fees that are internal to the fund, the market impact of those trades, that's what creates the real cost versus just holding spot Bitcoin. Most people should just buy Bitcoin, put it in cold storage, leave it alone. Don't try to lever it. Don't try to earn yield on it. Don't use any other products. Just hold Bitcoin and leave it alone for 5 or 10 years. That's the only way that I can sort of make a sort of assurance to somebody that I think they'll do pretty well. As soon as they start bringing in options, leverage, ETFs with futures, et cetera, there's a good chance they're going to mess something up.
Yeah. Brings me back to a quote from Warren Buffett's partner, Charlie Munger. He says that the big money isn't made in the buying and the selling. The big money is made in the waiting. So you wait for the right opportunity, and then you wait for that opportunity to come to fruition. And to what Mike is saying, Bitcoin has averaged, I mean, it had been averaging a 200% annual compounded growth rate. Even if that slows down to half of that, or even a quarter of that, 50 times, I mean, it's still amazing. And so just wait it out. That's been my approach as well. And it seemed to work out pretty good. Sometimes it doesn't look perfect, but like right now, but over the long run, if you zoom out, it's been pretty good. I've been buying since 2015, so it's worked out. You're listening to the Mark Moss Show. We're talking about Bitcoin. We're talking about the decentralized revolution. I've been in the studio with Mike Alfred. You can give him a follow on Twitter at Mike Alfred, talking about the contagion that we've seen in this crypto lending space. Word to you from Mike is get your money out of those platforms. You're on there. That's what I got for you today. Thanks for listening to the Mark Moss Show. Until next time.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Parrot Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light. Catch all 7 rounds, 3 days, live from Detroit. April 25th to 27th with NFL Network Draft coverage presented by Verizon and on ABC, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and streaming on NFL Plus. It all starts Thursday, April 25th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Visit NFL.com/draft for more information. Rocket Mortgage, official partner of the NFL Draft.